Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Jason Barsky Show.
Congressman Matt Cartwright.
Good morning, Jason. Nice to hear your voice.
It's nice to hear your voice as well. I got to be honest, the first time I heard your voice, I said, where does this guy's accent come from? I can't quite figure it out. I'm a Jersey guy with a fast talk. And I talk fast, and you got that slow thing going on. I was surprised, I'll be honest. But
yeah, you got to talk slow for me, Jason. I got old ears that are slow.
As an elected official, saying you're slow with anything will be used out of context. You do realize that, correct?
Well, everything already is, Jason, so what else is new?
I guess. Obviously, it's a campaign season for you. What are some things out there that you want to get off your chest? I'm going to start off with that. Usually, I'll just do a get-to-know-you type thing, but I'm going to go right there. What, is there anything you want to get off your chest? Because I think it's safe to say it's a bit of a nasty campaign season and things directed at you.
We are right into the silly season, but I don't want people to lose sight of what I ran for Congress to do, and it's to help our area. You know, I take over one of the top positions on House Appropriations in January. We haven't had that kind of clout in northeastern Pennsylvania for two generations. I'm following a playbook set by giants of the Congress before us in our area. And it's all in front of us. Look, what people are looking for right now from their elected leaders is somebody who's going to do everything they can to ensure we get through this pandemic crisis right now, and somebody with a vision for how to make us even stronger on the other side of the pandemic. First, we have to move forward with a strong legislative response to control the virus, restart our economy safely, with strong funding for testing, tracing, and PPE for healthcare workers. What we want to do is think about the economy. I mean, what we have to do is build up economic recovery. This pandemic really has exposed how reliant we are on global supply chains, especially China, for medicine, for PPE, and a whole host of other products. We have to start taking steps now to restore American manufacturing, both for our coronavirus response and also our long-term economic security. I'm supporting a bunch of legislation to strengthen Buy American provisions for our strategic national stockpile. Another priority of mine is reclaiming and developing our abandoned mine lands. Around here, when you do that, it leads to economic activity and jobs. I'm the leader in the Congress for abandoned mine land reclamation. We have 300 abandoned mines in northeastern Pennsylvania that can be cleaned up, and I'm leading the charge to do that. And in addition, we need better and bigger infrastructure. Look, the greatest generation passed down this portfolio of assets to us that we have not been improving, that we have not been restoring. And it's bigger than just roads and bridges. We can drive even more growth by investing in rural broadband everywhere, modernizing our schools, improving our electric grid. That's what we have to do. And I'm here to tell you, I am all in on infrastructure investment in our country. We have to do it.
Do you think after we get through this pandemic, do you think when you start visualizing, we start thinking about what does American infrastructure look like in the next 5-10 years? Do we learn anything from this? Are there areas? I mean, you mentioned broadband before. You mentioned, you know, getting jobs and bringing things back to America, which is something I know President Trump, that's something he's been a big supporter of. As you know, a lot of us have all said that. I'm an independent. People want to say I'm Democrat or whatever. People like to throw their labels at me. But it's something that, like, sure, we'd love things to be built here in America, but things went crazy at some point and we stopped doing that. You know, are there things that we can learn from this pandemic that we can kind of be visionaries about and go, okay, we're going to do things differently going forward? And if so, what are you thinking?
Well, we've learned a lot, and you have to give people a little slack. I mean, in this, we haven't gone through a pandemic in 100 years, so we're kind of learning as we're going. But we, you know, one thing it has taught us is that you need a plan. You need a coordinated national plan to prevent and slow these things. Unfortunately, our country has not done as well as other countries at that. I rack a lot of that up on Mitch McConnell's head. Here's a guy, we passed over 100 days ago the HEROES Act, which would inject over $3 trillion into the American economy. Look, Jason, we're in a recession now. You know, nationally it's 10% unemployment. In Pennsylvania it's 13%. Here in northeastern Pennsylvania it's over 15%. You get to between 15 and 25%, you're not talking about a recession, you're talking about a depression. And the harm that would do to people's entire lives is immeasurable, and we have to do everything we can do to prevent that, and that's why we passed the HEROES Act. Unfortunately, Mitch McConnell decided to take a pause on further federal investment in fighting the coronavirus. Look, I can't tell you how disgusted I am by that. You know, your rent payments don't take a pause. Your mortgage payments don't take a pause. You know, the grocery bills don't take a pause. You have to fill up your gas tank. That doesn't take a pause. Look, 70% of our American economy is driven by consumer demand. And when the consumers don't have the money to spend, that's when we slide into the Great Depression. And there's a whole long list of horrible things that are accompanied by a Great Depression. We have to do everything we can think of to be responsible and avoid that happening to our country, because if our country goes into a Great Depression, so does the world.
It leads to extremism.
It leads to, you know, extreme politicians. It leads to military adventurism. But you know what happened in the last Great Depression? It led to World War II.
Yeah, I have a question. When it comes to the House bill, the HEROES Act, people will I'm looking at the text they're flying in. He needs to acknowledge that the Democrats, all they're doing is fluffing, putting so much fluff in there. What do you say to the critics who say, all you're doing is you want to push this through because it's going to benefit certain groups of people, and it's just full of too much fluff? If they would strip it down, that's a different story.
Well, two things. Number one, the Democrats have offered to strip it down. Top Democratic congressional leadership has said, come on, Chuck, come to the table. Come on, Mitch, come to the table. And McConnell has set his face against negotiating. The second thing is, it's true. I want to benefit some people. I wrote part of the HEROES Act, and I wrote the part which is the hazard pay. You know, we're passing a lot of money out to keep the economy floating. And one group of people that were not getting anything extra were the frontline workers, the essential workers, the truck drivers and the grocery store workers and the EMTs and the people in the hospitals working up close and personal with known COVID victims. They were putting themselves in harm's way and not getting one extra nickel for their effort or their hazard. And I said, why don't we include them when we're passing out all this money? And we included it in the HEROES Act. I was so gratified they accepted my bill. And it would add $13 an hour till the end of 2020 for people doing frontline essential work that puts them in danger of catching COVID. It doesn't come from the employers. It comes from a special account in the Treasury Department. Again, Mitch McConnell has turned his back on that proposal as well.
Let me switch gears just a little bit here. Where do you stand on police? Because this is a To me, it feels like a crazy conversation, and it just seems to me it feels like semantics. When people say, like, well, this person doesn't want the police, or they want to defund the police. To me, it's, I don't know, the phrase defund police drives me nuts because I've read into it and I know that it's not like, hey, we want to get rid of police, but that's how it's pitched a lot. Where do you personally stand about the future of police work? And while we're at it, because I want to let you kind of slide into this conversation, the violence around the country, there's a lot of criticism that Democrats aren't standing up and saying enough is enough with the violence and the people burning cities down or burning parts of cities down, at least. Where do you stand on all of that? What's your official statement on the police, the violence that's happening around the country, and what do you think we could do to better make people feel better about the status of police and citizens in America of all races?
I am so grateful to you, Jason, for asking that question. No, I don't think it's semantics. I don't think it's a gray area. I think it's black and white. I absolutely support police, particularly the police in northeastern Pennsylvania. My God, we have some of the best, most professional and caring community policemen in northeastern Pennsylvania. When did you ever even see body cam footage of any one of our cops doing anything regrettable at all? No, they get it. They understand community policing, and I've been a full-throated supporter of our police in northeastern Pennsylvania. And to prove it, I helped them get grants for equipment. Just last year, I got the Hazleton Police Force almost $1.4 million in federal grant money to hire additional police officers. In the Hazleton Police Force, which you would think my opponent would realize since he claims to live in Hazleton. In fact, my opponent is spreading this nasty lie because it's something that pollsters tell them, well, if you say this about a Democrat, people will believe it and dislike the Democrat. It's a complete lie. In fact, to do it, he doctored an interview that I gave, and he took right out the part where they asked me about taking away funding, and I absolutely said twice in the interview, I am not for that. There are voices that are talking about that. I am not for that. Our police do a great job. In fact, I'm on the Appropriations Committee, and I'm for extra funding, and I have voted for extra funding for police because that's the answer. You know, we had police in our area, northeastern Pennsylvania, that marched along with us in the George Floyd demonstrations. They were decrying bad policing in other places, and that was the right thing for them to do. I am a full-throated supporter of the police. In fact, I'm a co-sponsor of a bill that helps retired police. Right now, people don't realize it, but they get this. There's this windfall provision that cuts their Social Security benefits if they're retired police and they're getting pension benefits that way. I'm a co-sponsor of a bill in Congress to get rid of that. Why would you want to cut the pension benefits and Social Security benefits of loyal northeastern Pennsylvania police officers, not me?
I'm 46, not quite near Social Security age. To any of our older listeners, where does Matt Cartwright stand on Social Security? A lot of mudslinging. This person wants to get rid of it. This side wants to get rid of it. This side doesn't. So much so that my head it hurts sometimes because I have to stop and go, wait, who said what, when, why? Because it seems to change depending on, I have to like figure out which party it is sometimes. Where do you stand? What's happening with Social Security?
Social Security and Medicare are two of the best aspects of government. And Social Security has saved so many millions of Americans from sliding into poverty over the generations. I'm a proud supporter of Social Security. Now, there's this crowd that talk about it as entitlements. I object to that word. Entitlements suggests that this is a gift from the government. It's not. It's an insurance plan. Look at your pay stubs, the FICA part. You pay into this insurance program with Social Security with every paycheck. And so it's people's money. And so when you have this crowd that comes along and talk about, quote, entitlement reform, unquote, what they're talking about is this constant chorus that you hear from the other side of the aisle saying, well, we've got to cut back on benefits. We've got to cut back on cost of living increases. You always hear it from them. And then when you call it on them, then they deny it. I am absolutely for not only expanding Social Security, you know, I'm for making cost of living adjustments realistic. If you know seniors, Jason, yeah, they'll tell you the cost of living increases are just sucked right up by the premium increases for Medicare Part D. It makes them really angry. We hear about it all the time, and I'm against that. I also am for cutting taxes. You know, Social Security benefits are taxed. Right now, if you make over $25,000 a year in Social Security benefits, you start to pay tax on everything over $25,000 a year. I'm for eliminating that. I'm for bumping that up to $50,000. So in other words, I'm for cutting taxes that are charged on Social Security benefits as well.
Gotcha. Couple people have asked this, and I wanted to ask, as this campaign goes on, Jim Bugnett had called in last week, and he had said he challenged you, I want to say, 5 or 6 debates. He said you accepted one of them. Was it 5 or 6? I forget the number. But in your last campaigns, is this fewer debates in the past than you've done in the past? And if so, would you consider that many debates? Or is it just, what is your answer to that? Because he made that claim. He put his foot down. He said, look, I'm asking. He threw it out there and made it seem like you don't want to step up and debate.
Well, there's a lot of things that he's been saying that seem different than the way things actually are. I absolutely am looking forward to the regular, routine, traditional debate at WVIA in Pittston. Mm-hmm. They do a wonderful job. They give us an entire hour. It's televised throughout the district. And the thing I really like about it is that they get a panel of very sharp reporters and also political science professors. Mm-hmm. Who ask hard questions. They go right to the meat of issues, and they don't let you dodge the questions. They make you answer the questions. I like that. I think it's responsible journalism, and it's something that really flushes out the true positions and opinions of the candidates. So I've done that every year, the WVIA debate. I've enjoyed it, and I look forward to a full and fair discussion of all of the issues in that hour-long debate later this fall.
But as far as other ones, what is your take on that? The idea of, like, you know, we want to do 4 or 5 debates.
It's going to be unnecessary. We cover all of the issues in that debate, and everybody in the whole district can see the WVIA debate.
Okay. And in the past, have you only done the one debate, or have there been multiple debates in the past for past campaigns?
It has varied. I remember when I first ran, my opponent refused to debate me at all, and we didn't have one single debate.
Lovely.
But, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. But, I'm absolutely unafraid of debating, and I actually enjoy them. So, looking forward to it.
Before I let you go, since you've been in Washington, what is the one thing you're most proud of? What accomplishment? Here's where this question comes from, by the way. I'm going to give a little backstory. We tend to be in a time where if you don't like the president, you say, the president's done nothing. If you don't like Nancy Pelosi, you say, Nancy Pelosi's done nothing. If you don't like Matt Cartwright, you go, he's done nothing. When it comes to accomplishments, I think it comes down to, oh, I don't like that accomplishment or I don't know about it. What is your biggest accomplishment, in your opinion, since you've been in D.C.?
Well, kind of you to ask that. It's two of them that I would highlight. And both of them stem from this. When I got elected, I promised, you know, everybody's so sick of the political food fighting going on in Washington. I promised not to engage in that. And almost consistently, I have not engaged in that. In fact, in my 8 years in Congress, I have written more bills supported by Republicans, co-sponsored by Republican congressmen and women, more of those than any other Democrat. That's 4 Congresses in a row. I've been the number one Democrat attracting Republican co-sponsors for my legislation. I'm very proud of that. It has led to my ability to pass 4 bills on my own. That's really hard. You know, remember how they used to say something that's really hard is like an act of Congress? Well, I passed 4 of them in my name. 2 of them have Barack Obama's signature on them, and 2 of them have Donald J. Trump's signature on them. So I am not afraid to work with the other side. I see that as part of my job. And because of it, the other thing is down at Vanderbilt University, they have the Center for Effective Lawmaking, and it's the lawmakers.org. And they, in the last Congress, they rated me one of the top 10 members of, top 10 most effective members of Congress. When you get right down to it, that's what you want. You want to cut through all the BS and you want to find out who is effective. I've been working hard at this job. I want to help Northeastern Pennsylvania. I'm about to take over an appropriation subcommittee that's really going to ramp up my ability to bring money home. And that's why I got into this business.
Thank you for coming on. I'd love to have you back again, at least once, maybe twice, you know, as we get toward election day, just to discuss more specifics here. But I appreciate you taking the time this morning, and we will talk again. I hope you're willing to come back and chit-chat with us again about what's up in D.C. and Northeast PA.
Oh, I enjoy talking to you, Jason. Good job.
The Jason Barsky Show, weekday mornings from 9 till noon on WILK News Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.